Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and as always, we're bringing you our feature interview, followed by some new music from Ukraine. This week, we're focusing on the Crimean Tatars. It's the anniversary this month of their deportation. On their tragic modern history, their place and role in Ukraine, and their current difficult situation. And I'll be talking to one of their young representatives here in Kyiv. I'm delighted to have as my guest this week on our program, Arsen Zhumadilov, a Crimean Tatar representative who teaches at the famous Kyiv Mohyla Academy. The reason why we have him this particular week, though we should have the Crimean Tatar question focus on more often, is because, of course, in this month of May, traditionally we celebrate the notorious deportation of the entire Crimean Tatar people. Arsen, how many years is it now since that deportation?
It is 74 years now.
This was in 1944 in May, as I recall.
On May 18th, 1944, the whole Crimean Tatar people were deported from Crimea to Siberia and Central Asia. Tomorrow is the 74th, anniversary.
And ostensibly or purportedly, the Stalinist regime used what allegation or what basis for that?
Well, the premises, they were falsified. They accused us on being collaborators with the Nazis, which was to some extent true, but the extent was no way larger than it was among the Russians or the Ukrainians or whoever
Baltz,
else.
Georgians.
Or the Baltz, whoever else.
Okay, tell me then. The Crimean Tatars, of course, were not the only people that were deported en masse in 1944. As I recall, there were eight entire peoples that were deported.
Let me recall all of them. The Crimean Tatars, Armenians, Bulgarians, Germans. Then you had a few Italians actually even in Crimea who were also deported. So all these people, they were deported from Crimea. Apart from Crimea, there were these Caucasian nations who were also
deported. Were
they
all Jews deported?
All Jews, of course.
I don't mean by the Germans, but yes.
Karaims and Krimchaks, they were also deported.
I'm talking more about how many entire peoples in the former Soviet Union, like the Chechens, like the Kalmyks, like the Meskhetian Turks.
Yes, Karachaevs, Ingush, Meskhetian Turks, Balkars. I don't have an exact figure.
I think it was eight entire peoples.
Yeah, up to 10. But from among them, only three were not allowed to come back to their native lands up until the collapse of the Soviet Union. And these three were the Crimean Tatars, the Meskhetian Turks, we mentioned, and Volga Germans.
Well, I had the honor as a young student in Britain and a specialist on nationality questions in 1980. I wrote a report for the Minority Rights Group on exactly those three peoples, the Crimean Tatars, the Meskhetian Turks, and the Volga Germans. Well, the Volga Germans in the 50s, they had some support from West Germany, from Adenauer, and many of them returned. Meskhetian Turks, unfortunately, got stuck, never were allowed to return. Georgia did not allow them back, unlike Ukraine. But the return of the Crimean Tatars, as we know, was not easy. There were issues, as I recall, because I used to work for the UN at that time, with citizenship, but just the attitude towards the Crimean Tatars. My understanding is that Ukraine accepted them, but Kyiv didn't really follow through and ensure that they enjoyed the proper political and economic rights.
Absolutely correct. Now, There is actually a distinction from the attitude of the central government in Kyiv towards the Crimean Tatars and the attitude of the local authorities in Crimea towards the Crimean Tatars. So the attitude of authorities in Kyiv since 1991 and up until 2014, it was, you can call it, maybe ignorance. So they would know...
Ignorance or they weren't a priority?
So, yes, the Crimean Tatar issue was not prioritized. They saw it as being is a very marginal one. So we didn't really have like a lot of problems with the central government, but we did not have their support either.
You had support, as I understand, from some of the democratic forces,
from
Ruh,
from
people like Chernobyl.
Yes, but unfortunately, they have never been in power, in full power, in full flesh.
And hence, symbolically, or as a form of tokenism, perhaps, if we're to be cynical, at least Mustafa Cemilov, your famous leader, and Mr. Chubarov have made it into parliament, as I recall.
Yes, correct, correct.
What that amounted to in terms of political influence is another question.
Yes. So here in Kiev, it was usually a lip service. And in Crimea, the local authorities, they were very much opposed against the Crimean Tatars, against our return to the homeland. So apart from the issue with the citizenship, there was an issue with land allocation. There was an issue with languages taught in schools, with children in kindergartens, with getting in employment, etc., etc., all the issues that should be dealt with at a local level.
You know, I remember in the 90s, late 90s, mid to late 90s, how difficult it was for your community in Crimea because the local Russian-dominated authorities, and not particularly pro-Ukrainian,
absolutely,
used to bulldoze your what they call squatter settlements because they weren't allowing you to have property in the towns and the cities to reclaim your property.
Absolutely. Yes, we've been through some very hard years back in 1990s and then 2000s as well.
And that's the issue that I want to highlight for our listeners, that of course the great tragedy was the uprooting, the deportation of the Crimean Tatars in 1944. But even after they returned, they suffered greatly, and it is to their credit that they remained peaceful, did not resort to violent means to defend themselves.
Yes, and this is a very good point. We, the Crimean Tatars, we actually showed a level of, let us say, democracy and
tolerance and patience.
Yes, patience, which was unexpected by many. That we, the Crimean Tatars, when we got back in 1991, we re-established our bodies of self-governance. We were always very, adamant in sticking to the non-violence as our key priority. That we have always said that we, the Crimean Tatars, we have the right to all the things that we claim. So we do not have to be violent to claim them all. So,
but you had to defend yourself sometimes. I mean, you had murders in the community.
Yes, unfortunately, our opponents, they did not share this ideology. So they resorted to even things like that. So,
and that's the tragedy, that in the Soviet period, once the Crimean Tatars were deported, in fact, Moscow settled old veteran KGB officers, military officers, very pro-imperial-minded people who, of course, didn't want you to come back and reclaim your ancient territory and also your homes and vineyards and everything else, the culture.
Yeah. It is interesting that it was yesterday when I watched a news report from this newly built Kerch bridge, a bridge over the Kerch Strait. So, and they were interviewing a woman in Kerch who said that I'm a daughter of a military officer, a Soviet military officer. My father was a military officer, and my mother was as well a military officer. And they settled in Crimea, and now I feel like being a Crimean. So therefore, I'm very much happy that now we have this bridge with Russia.
So we translate that into understandable language. What she was saying, I am the daughter of a military colonizer. We are here. We push the others out. We don't want them back because... We like it. Crimea is a great place.
And we are happy.
Right, but not the rest of us. So tell us, okay, let me remind listeners that your leader, the head of the Mejlis, your council, your democratic body that has run your community life, your national life, that Mustafa Jamilov was not only a political prisoner several times, I think 3 or 4 times during the Soviet period, for organizing peaceful, nonviolent protests, mass ones, very rare in the Soviet period, but also that the UN gave him the highest award in this realm, the Nansen Award, for a nonviolent stance in the face of severe provocation. This, I think, was in the 90s or in the 2000s. I can't recall exactly. Probably around, I think, the late 90s. So, you know, that is for the record. Okay, let's move on. But before we move on, I forgot to ask you to introduce yourself a little bit more. So I'm talking to Arsen Zhumadilov. Arsen, tell us where are you from, how you ended up, what do you do?
I'm from Simferopol. I was born there. I'm among very few Crimean Tatars of my age who were happy enough to be born in Crimea, because my family moved back even before the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was a very hard process, but they managed to do it. So I was born in Crimea. I was raised there. I studied in school there. But then I studied in Kyiv Mohyla Academy, actually. I was a student there. And then I did my master's degree at the London School of Economics. Then I was...
Where I was a student.
Really?
So we have something in common.
Oh, interesting.
I was there in the late 70s, working on Soviet nationalities problems.
Oh, such a pleasure. Yeah, and then I worked in corporate segment till 2014. And then in 2014, the events broke out and the
Well,
the
let's
Russian
not jump
aggression.
Ahead so fast.
Okay.
Where did you learn your great English?
Well, as I said, I studied at the London School of Economics, but before that I studied in Kyiv Mohyla Academy, and I'm very thankful that this university gave quite a strong knowledge of English. But even before that, I studied at a famous Tankovaya boarding school for gifted children. It was a unique school in back in Crimea that provided instruction of some lessons in English.
Wonderful. Now, in those earlier years, let's not jump ahead to Maidan, the Revolution of Dignity, and what happened in Crimea. We'll come to that in a second. How did you feel as a young Crimean Tatar linked with Ukraine, studying in the West? Did you feel that you were understood, A, in Ukraine, and B, in the outside world?
Oh, that is a very interesting question, because I would think, as well as my friends who studied here, all the Crimean Tatars in Kyiv, we would think that we were well understood by our fellow students, you know, and fellow Ukrainians. But it looked like then that it was not the case. In 2014, it caught us by surprise that the Ukrainians here, they were amazed by the behavior that we, the Crimean Tatars...
By your loyalty.
Absolutely.
And your pro-Ukrainian stance. You identified as citizens of Ukraine.
They did not expect us to be that, you know, to feel that strong about our citizenship, that we are loyal citizens of Ukraine, that we see Crimea as an integral part of Ukraine. They did not expect us to be that strong believers in our, united nation.
And united political nation.
Yes, united political nation. So in that times, we always, you know, we pinned high hopes for new coming political leaders. I remember our emotions when President Yushchenko was elected. We were a very active part of Orange Revolution. I remember me and my friends standing out at the first Maidan, the Orange Revolution, you know, day and nights, standing to support him. We thought that, so this is the moment. So this is the high time for Ukraine to change, to now finally become a proper European state. But then, you know what happened, and we lost the chances. We had 10 years of...
lost time.
Lost time, yes.
At a huge cost.
Absolutely.
But you were there, and your presence was very discernible, very conspicuous at the Maidan, giving out plov for free to... you know, there was a symbolic presence of the Crimean Tatars,
yeah.
And that meant a lot at that time.
Yeah, the second Maidan, you mean?
Yes, at the second Maidan.
Yeah,
at the revolution of dignity.
At the revolution of dignity, yes, indeed, with the Crimean Tatars, we were very clear that Yanukovych's rule is a mistake, that he should leave, he should go. We had no illusions whatsoever about that man. So we were a part of the revolution of dignity. We really had some very... you know, good stories out of from there before the killings started. And I remember those days. I was in Crimea, though, but I know that on February 18th, when this massacre started, actually, Mustafa Djemilev was among very few Ukrainian politicians who was brave enough to step on the scene of the Maidan and to say some very strong words to the men and women who were there.
So we should say in retrospect, Slava Heroyam, to living heroes. And Mustafa is a Crimean Tatar hero, but he's also a hero of Ukraine. Well, you're very fortunate that you've had at least one, if not several, leaders in recent times who really have put their people, their nation first.
Yeah.
And you are an example to all of us in that respect. We can learn a lot from you. Look, okay, moving on. So suddenly the Maidan is over. We think that, okay, we're going to have a new rule, a new rule of dignified, democratic Ukrainian politicians. And suddenly... the Green Men move into Crimea and start taking it over. And we remember the very brave, courageous protest by Crimean Tatar women on the street, by your huge presence outside the autonomous parliament. It was touch and go at that time. The Crimean Tatars really came out in force in support of a united Ukraine.
Yeah, and this was a crucial moment, actually, because Putin's, you know, master plan for Crimea was to show that it was all peaceful, that he thought that his people on the ground would make it all happen without these, you know, mass rallies against it. So he did not count on the Crimean Tatars. He did not, you know, he did not take us into account. And the Crimean Tatars, when they went out to the streets of Simferopol on February 26th, when they actually blocked the Crimean parliament and they wouldn't let the Crimean deputies to together and to vote for some, you know, decisions that would eventually bring Crimea out of Ukraine, they understood that the so-called peaceful plan is not feasible, yes, so therefore they opted for an open aggression.
When a military option disguised as who knows who, green men, anonymous locals.
Absolutely, so very poorly disguised.
Okay, and let's move on, let's move on. So the so-called referendum took place. Now, I remember reading a document submitted to Putin by a presidential council, which consisted at that time still of many Democrats, where they said that only about 31% participated, unlike this myth of 90-something percent supporting it. And that I'm sure Crimean Tatars, very few voted, you know, 10, 15%, if at all, if they were forced to.
Crimean Tatars, by and large, boycotted the so-called referendum, as well as actually majority of other people living in Crimea. I very well remember the atmosphere in the air.
Were you still there?
Yes, yes, I was there. I was actually...
tell us, because time is short, but Tell us in a few sentences the drama, the feelings, the emotions. What did you feel? Scared, frightened? Did you think, oh my God, this is another deportation in the making? Where are we headed? You are, as a young man, your whole future is at stake here. Your world is being turned upside down again. What did you feel?
Well, the first emotion, the first feeling that we all shared, it was that this is not for real, that this is just a theater. This just cannot happen in the 21st century, that a neighboring state just invades the other states with military power. So the first impression was that it is not for real. It was just, you know, vain. It will go away in a few days. When it did not happen, the second emotion was that we have to fight and we have to be really strong in voicing our support to the territorial integrity of Ukraine, that Crimea is a part of Ukraine. This is when we've created our network of self-defense units at every village and place of, you know, compact settlement of the Crimean Tatars in Crimea. I actually was the one who brought together a young man in my village where I lived in Crimea. It was, you know, a suburb of Simferopol. When we had 24/7 people on duty who would see who is coming in and coming out of the village to control the situation.
Were you frightened that you would be provoked into a violent response?
We were not frightened. We really felt that Ukraine would fight for Crimea, and this is why we have to also show that we are here. The pro-Ukrainian population is there.
So were you disappointed by the feeble response?
We were very much disappointed when they just let the so-called referendum on March 16, happening.
Happen.
And then it became obvious, within a few days, maybe weeks, that Ukraine is just, it did not turn a blind eye, but it did not want to fight for Crimea. And when we understood suddenly, because we, for all this time, we thought that we are all together, that Ukraine, that, you know, the official Kyiv would, you know,
support you,
would make the most to
express its solidarity in other ways.
Absolutely. And when we understood that it was not the case, that that the state was just leaving the place, and that we are now, you know, vis-a-vis our enemy in Crimea on our own, then when the fear came.
Okay. Look, time is very short, and I wish we would have had more time to talk about the present situation. But summing up, obviously, it's a very ugly situation. Repression, arrests, disappearances. Sum up, if you can, where we stand in terms of to what extent can you rely on external support? To what extent have you found a new understanding and support within Ukraine?
Now, I would say that our hope is for a strong Ukraine, strong, unified Ukraine that will make it happen eventually, that Crimea will be a part of Ukraine again. This is what we really hope for, because we saw the international community and its reaction, which was very weak in 2014 and still now.
So some sanctions, at least a General Assembly declaration condemning, but weak. Yes,
happened, but it was weak. It was inadequate. So it was not enough to retaliate. So we hope that Ukraine will one day become a strong state, strong enough to reclaim all its territories. And we hope that, and we believe that the Crimean Tatars will be seen now by the Ukrainians as a part of a Ukrainian political nation with an autonomy in Crimea, the Crimean Tatar autonomy. So that
finally recognized,
so that we, the Crimean Tatars and the Ukrainians, can then move on, going side by side, building a bright future for our children.
And if you have a final thought or a wish you want to share with listeners, I always invite my guest to finish on a parting thought. What is your message to our listeners, to our English-speaking listeners out there, on behalf of the Crimean Tatars?
My message is, I would call on whoever listens us now, is to understand the Crimean Tatars. Just please do not think of us as if we live somewhere else, that we are from another planet. We, the Crimean Tatars, we are compatriots of Ukrainians here. We are citizens of the world. Please understand us. Please try to feel the pain that we've been through and that we are in at the moment. When you understand us, then you will definitely support us, because the cause that we've been championing for so many years is a right one.
I thank you very much, Arsen, for being my guest. And now on to music. It's not easy to find contemporary Crimean Tatar music, but Hromadske Radio's co-founder Andrei Kulikov seeks it out. On his music show Pora Roku, he recently played a song by a band called R2 Ya, or Remzik and Ramzik, pseudonyms two guys adopted. They now live in Kyiv. One of them recently revealed that his name is Muslim Umerov. The song is called Oreset, which means I'll kiss you. Listen for the traditional Tatar melodies, Crimean Tatar that is, intertwined with a modern beat.
Jam, yok, ope jam, son ole jam. İzlerini okşaya cat, çimen olup tişeli jam. Ot olacağım, taş olacağım, ayağına sarılacağım.
Taş olacağım, taş olacağım, kayak gibi yarılacağım. Yel olacağım, saçlarını, oylarını çıbıltacağım. Gözlerini ağlatacağım, zilifinde çık olacağım. Op mi dedin, yok öpeceğim.
Looking forward. Join us again next week when we'll bring you a topical, in-depth interview and some music. So tune in. And we would be happy to receive any feedback from you. write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Bohdan Nahailo in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.